Monday, January 22nd, 2018, you are listening to the Daily Dose Sports Podcast, and I am your host, Clint Daly, coming to you from the Mile High City. Yes, it is a very snowy Denver, Colorado this morning. Happy Monday to you. Hope you are ready for another week as we get started on another week. Like I mentioned, we do have a bunch of snow here in Denver. Started coming down on Sunday, has been snowing off and on all day Sunday into Monday morning. I know there's a number of kids in the Denver metro area hoping that they are going to get the day off. Not sure that's going to happen. We kind of just roll with these things here in Colorado. I know in some of those southern states, you're probably shutting down if you had like an eighth of this. It's not exactly how we do it here in Colorado, but you never know. Got to see how things shape up this morning and how the roads look. You know, the United States government officially is shut down right now. Do you realize that? Kind of crazy. They're working, trying to get things patched up. I don't think that they got anything really done. But, you know, they couldn't come to a spending agreement last Friday. And now both sides pointing at each other. Who's to blame? Those guys with those color ties or those ladies with those color dresses or just pointing back and forth at who's to blame for this whole thing. You know, sometimes we start off our jobs, especially on Mondays, it seems like, and you just kind of feel insignificant, don't you? Like, if I don't process these sales orders, would it really matter? Like, does my job honestly even matter? And to be fair, it probably would. Like, if you didn't get those done, someone would notice. It would be noticed. Like, if you don't answer this phone call at your job today, would it matter? Yeah, probably. Because then someone's going to get missed. Someone's going to be upset and there's going to be a problem. So I know we're getting started on this Monday and you might be thinking, does my job even matter? When I get up on this Monday morning, does it even make any difference whatsoever? And I want you to know that no matter how insignificant you think your job might be, there is no way it is more meaningless than these politicians that can just completely stop working. And like, unless you work for the government, honestly, we can't tell the difference, can we? Like, I don't notice any difference. We can't really feel it. So you're ahead of them on this Monday morning, if nothing else. You are at least ahead of them. Hey, if you would like to contact the show, tell us why you hate your job, or maybe you have some feedback for the show, or you have something you would like us to discuss. We'd love to hear from you. Hit us up on email, dailydosesports@gmail.com, or go find us over on Facebook or Twitter. Both of those handles are at Daily Dose Sports, and feel free to reach out to us. Today on the show, of course, we will be recapping those NFL championship games. Are you excited for Super Bowl 52? Like, I'm wondering, how does most of the world feel about Super Bowl 52? Is that the matchup you wanted? Not sure if it is. But we did see a few other interesting events take place over the weekend, including a few NBA games I want to talk about, maybe just a little bit of boxing, and a big name college basketball program is just getting even better. So we did have the NFL championship games yesterday. You know, that first game, Jacksonville at New England, I would be lying if I would say that it went any different than I thought it would. It basically went exactly how I thought it would. I mean, I just about could have predicted that score almost. So if you didn't see it, the New England Patriots get the early field goal as Tom Brady found Brandon Cooks, Danny Amendola on a couple long passes. But you did see Tom Brady take a couple hits early. They had to kick the field goal, and the Patriots took an early lead 3-0. But you could see kind of early on, Jacksonville was actually the team that was controlling the line of scrimmage early. On defense, they were getting a push in the interior line of scrimmage. And on offense, they had a few running lanes. Leonard Fournette was getting some traction and getting going. Blake Bortles, he isn't having to do much. And early on, we actually saw Jacksonville take a 14-3 lead. Hey, Gillette Stadium was quiet. You could hear a pin drop in that place. In the second quarter, they came out and said, okay, we're going to Gronk. We have to throw him the ball. We have to get him involved. And you could see maybe Brady was a little more nervous in the pocket early on than what we're used to seeing from him. Maybe it was the cut on the hand. Maybe it was just the pressure from the interior linemen, from those defensive linemen of Jacksonville. Whatever it was, they were getting a push in his face, and you could see him kind of scrambling himself into sacks, maybe throwing the ball before he was ready, kind of saying, hey, Jacksonville is disguising some coverages. They're doing some really, really good things in the first half. But just before halftime, Jacksonville was driving. And on a 3rd and 7, Jacksonville took a delay of game penalty, and they were forced to punt. And I know it's not a game-winning play or a game-losing play, but Jacksonville had the ball up 14-3. They had actually converted a 3rd and 7, but they had that delay of game penalty. And when they punted, And the Patriots got the ball back with 2 minutes left. I was like, just put a pin in that. Just keep that one in mind. Because that could, just maybe, come back to haunt Jacksonville. And of course, it did. It felt like a very important drive. It was. If the Patriots are down two scores at halftime, it just has a different feel. But instead, what do? They go right down the field. First off, Brady goes back to Gronkowski. And we see why defensive backs take big shots at these wide receivers. Because Barry Church absolutely headhunted Rob Gronkowski, knocked him out of the game. But you could see Jacksonville like, hey, it's worth a 15-yarder. Yes, we're going to have to give up those 15 yards, but we knocked Rob Gronkowski out of the game. He's in concussion protocol. We don't have to worry about him the rest of the day. NFL players and head injuries, you have to protect them from themselves. It's not like the league's coming in and hitting him over the head with something. These guys are doing it to each other. This is why they're eventually going to have to, I believe, institute a targeting ejection in the NFL. Because defensive players say, yeah, I'm going to get penalized. Who cares? If I can knock a guy like Rob Gronkowski out of the game, I'm going to do it. 10 times out of 10, if I get the chance, I'm going to do it. Do you really think I'm going to pull up and say, I might hurt him? Promise you they won't. On the very next play, Tom Brady throws the long pass to Brandon Cooks. Is it a pass interference penalty? Maybe. It's kind of dicey. I don't know if he could have got to that ball no matter what happened. But all of a sudden, the New England Patriots have gone from a situation where they could have been down two, maybe three scores to knocking on the door, a game that could have been maybe 17-3 or maybe 21-3 Jacksonville. All of a sudden, it changes that quickly and goes 14-10 Jacksonville, and you're like, it's a ball game. And we don't know the status of Gronkowski yet, but it really felt like Jacksonville should have been up more at halftime. If they would have even got a field goal, would have been a very, very different game. You can't give Tom Brady and the New England Patriots a chance to breathe. And it just kind of felt like at halftime, I wonder if that's going to come back and haunt them. And of course, we know that it did. Beginning of the second half, the Jaguars were able to get a long field goal from their kicker. They're up 17-10. The Jags defense, I give them a ton of credit. They couldn't come up with the stops late, but through three and a half quarters, they were really, really good. The problem that it seemed like the later the game got, didn't it start to look like their defensive line just ran out of gas? The later the game got, you started to see less and less pressure on Brady, and you can't let Brady just stand back there. All season, and even through the playoffs, we had kept hearing, and we kept seeing, really, hey, Jacksonville can manufacture pressure with just four. On Sunday, the later the game got, the less pressure we saw. Now they're not getting pressure with four. They had to bring a blitzer a couple times, and we know Tom Brady is so good at attacking your blitz. If you're going to blitz him, you better get him because he's going to make you pay for it if you don't. And it just seemed like the later the game got, the New England offensive line, I don't know if they're getting nearly enough credit because they really kept Brady clean against just those front four. And as a result, you started to see the Patriots kind of climb back into it. The Jags actually did drive, get another field goal up 20-10, most of the fourth quarter still to go. And remember another play that you kind of just put a pin in was when the Patriots turned it over. They threw the little pass to James White. He's running down the field. And the linebacker for Jacksonville, Miles Jack, strips the ball. There was a review. Did he get it? Did he not get it? But in watching that play, you're sitting there saying, hey, Jacksonville got the ball back. They stopped the drive. They're up 20-10. If they could just go get anything here, if they could even get maybe a first down here, they just might be able to do something. They just might pull off the crazy upset. What did Jacksonville do when they had to do something? Right there, they went three and out. They went three and out. Came up a yard short, went three and out. So again, you can't give Brady this many chances. Of course, the Patriots get it back. They go 85 yards, including a third and 18 without Gronkowski. Cut it to 20-17. There's still 9 minutes and you're sitting there going, this game's over. I mean, there's plenty of time. I started texting people, hey, this game's over. You can stop watching. It's over. In the biggest play of the game, late, while they still had the lead, Blake Bortles fails to see a wide open receiver on third and long. The Jaguars have to punt again, and Brady's getting hot, and you can just feel it coming. The Patriots are getting a pass interference call. Now the Jags have 98 penalty yards against them. You can just feel like things are starting to flow their way. And I know I heard a lot of talk about, is this the conspiracy? Of course, we talked about it last week. Hey, the Patriots get every call. The Patriots get every call. I don't know that I saw the Patriots getting calls that were just blatantly wrong. The biggest thing I see is it's kind of, I'm going to give Kobe Bryant the benefit of the doubt on a jumper. He probably got fouled. Am I going to give it to Joe Blow, the shooter on the side? No. I'm not going to give that to him. Am I going to give a call to Michael Jordan? Or am I going to give a call to LeBron James? Yeah, I'm more apt to than, you know, the schlub. But it's the New England Patriots offense. They're going to get more calls than Jacksonville's offense is going to get. Tom Brady and his offense, I promise you, are going to get more calls than Blake Bortles and his offense. It's just a natural thing that referees are going to do. And you might sit there and say, well, is it right? I don't know. But is it just blatantly dirty? Is there a conspiracy? No. The Patriots offense is just getting calls. The Jags defense, like they said, they held up for as long as they could. But again, late in the fourth quarter, you just saw Jacksonville going three and out. And you even started to see opportunities. I'm watching Blake Bortles and saying, okay, played pretty good in the first half. Not much asked of him, but played pretty good in the first half. Had some pretty good stats in the first half. But as the game wore on and as it started to get tighter and get closer and get pressure, you saw Brady coming up with play after play after play, and you saw Bortles not. Again and again and again. And the thing was, there were opportunities late where you saw Jacksonville have the ball. Bortles drops back. There is 15, 20 yards in front of him. No, I'm going to prove I'm a passer. I'm going to stay in the pocket. I'm going to make a throw. And he can't make the throw. It was just kind of painful to watch down the stretch. Of course, as we get down the stretch, late in the game, what else could possibly happen? Bortles isn't capable of making the plays. Tom Brady is capable of making the plays. The Patriots get the ball back. They get a good punt return. They're in very, very good field position. And of course, Tom Brady finds Danny Amendola in the end zone with just under 3 minutes left to play. Here is a clip from CBS.
White, the running back. Brady under center. Second and goal. Fake it to White. Looking around. Has time. Throws it. Did he get the feed down? What an effort. Touchdown, Amendola.
It's not over yet. Right, there's less than 3 minutes to play, but it's not over yet. Score now is 24-20 New England. You got to go get a touchdown, but it is over because it's Blake Bortles. Bortles drives the Jags into New England territory, but then, of course, the drive fizzles because, again, it's Blake Bortles. What's he going to do? They end up turning the ball over on fourth down. New England has the ball with a minute 47 left. Jags have all three timeouts, but what's the point? We know that Blake Bortles just isn't capable of making those plays in that kind of a game on the road. Of course, Jacksonville can't get the stop. New England runs out the clock, and that's the end. But there were a couple things that kind of struck me as the game ended. One, did you notice how excited Bill Belichick was? Like, he was super excited. I don't know that I've ever seen him show that much excitement. That was a little bit odd. And it did make me wonder if there was something more to that. Whether it was a, hey, I know my coordinators might be leaving. Whether it was, I know this thing could all be going away. Maybe he was looking at it and saying, I know that we are a lot more beatable than maybe people think we are. I don't know what it was, but I did see some emotion out of Bill Belichick that you're just not used to seeing. That was a little odd. But the other thing that I thought was odd, not sure if you heard this, did you hear Tony Romo, who I like in the booth? I'm not dogging Tony Romo. I really not. I enjoy most of what he's saying. I don't listen to the announcers that much. I've told you that. But I think he's a pretty good announcer. I think he did a pretty good job. But when the game ended, Tony Romo had a couple of comments that I thought were odd. First, he said he thought Blake Bortles played excellent football, but he just, you know, wasn't quite enough to get the win. Excellent football? He was 23 of 36, 293 yards and a touchdown. Okay, that's solid. That's a solid day. But he failed to make plays all day. And again, all those plays that I look back and said, put a pin in that one, put a pin in that one. Just kind of remember that one. Is it the play of the game? No. Is it a very, very important play? Yes. All of those plays, Blake Bortles failed to make. Every single one of those plays. Was it excellent football? Like, I have a hard time saying he played an excellent game. He's okay. But again, the later the game got, the tighter the game got, the worse he got. Then, Tony Romo said something that kind of struck me even weirder. He said, with all the Patriots have gone through, the Patriots have gone through so much to even get to this AFC championship. Have they? Like, have they really? They went through Tennessee and Jacksonville. What a wild ride that must have been for them. I mean, and don't get me wrong, you play who's in front of you, but what have they gone through? They went through the AFC South. Slow down, Tony. Like, I know you're all excited because it's the first conference championship you've ever been to, but that might be the softest course ever to get to a Super Bowl. And I don't want to hear about the struggles the Patriots have gone through because of, you know, a Meanie Pants article about them and a boo-boo on Brady's hand. And give me a break. I mean, look at Kansas City. The Kansas City Chiefs have Andy Reid. The Pittsburgh Steelers have a team of prima donnas that couldn't even show up on time for their playoff game. You have the Tennessee Titans, who won a playoff game and still fired their head coach. And then you have Jacksonville, who has Blake Bortles. The Patriots saying what they have overcome, it sounds remarkably a lot like first world problems, doesn't it? You know, I went to this five-star restaurant last night, and they didn't even put cucumber in my sparkling water. Aw, poor thing. Poor Patriots. How have they overcome so much? Just amazing. I look around the AFC, and I'm like, I don't know if you're overcoming that much. You still got things pretty good. Over in the NFC side, you know, in the NFC championship game, if you'd have told me the score ahead of time, I would not have said it was Philly that ended up winning. The Minnesota Vikings started really, really strong in that game, going to Philly. In that first drive, they're mixing the run, they're mixing the pass. They ran for 27 yards. Case Keenum's got time. He goes 3 for 3 for 48 yards. They go 83 yards down, get a 7-0 lead, and you're like, hey, Minnesota looks like they're ready to roll. It looks like all that emotion they used up last week, somehow they have found a way to get back up for this game. They are ready to go, and here we go. This should be a really, really fun game starting off in Philly. Nick Foles had a chance to strike big early, missed Torrey Smith, and you're kind of going, hey, maybe it's just not Philly's day. Very early, third down, Nick Foles throws a very accurate pass to tight end Trey Burton, who for some reason jumped when he didn't need to and landed out of bounds. No catch. And the Eagles have to punt again, and you're sitting there going, I don't know, this might be Minnesota's day early on. And then Case Keenum had his arm hit, threw an interception, Patrick Robinson zigzagged back and forth and scored the touchdown. 7-7.
Four men on the rush. Keenum throws, he's picked! Patrick Robinson back the other way. Looking for a block. Gets it! Robinson for the touchdown!
The Vikings kind of looked like they have something going on offense. But then they'd go three and out. And then the Eagles would put together another drive and go the length of the field and score. And then the Vikings don't go anywhere. And then the Eagles go score again. And then the Vikings don't go anywhere. And then the Eagles go score again. If you had told me at halftime it would be 24-7, I would have had to have guessed that Minnesota was the one scoring all the points. There's no way Nick Foles is going to light up the Minnesota defense. That isn't going to happen. Second half, maybe it was just a lucky half. Like, maybe it just was a weird thing, and maybe this will get tight. Maybe they'll start to close it up. Philly gets it right out of halftime, goes another 75 yards, scores again. It's 31-7. The game is over. What in the world happened in Philadelphia last night? What in the world is going on? The offense, this same offense with Nick Foles that couldn't score a single point against the Dallas Cowboys, is lighting up the best defense statistically in the NFL this year. How in the world does that happen? It just doesn't make any sense. I know that's why we play the game. And I know that's why we don't just play the games on paper. We actually play the games out and we see what happens. But how in the world does an offense that looks so completely inept manage to light up what is, again, statistically, the best defense in the NFL in the biggest game up to that point? And I want to tell you what happened on Sunday in Philadelphia. Because there's going to be a lot of theories. There's going to be, well, I'll tell you what happened last night was Nick Foles, he really started to see the field. And I know that we didn't see that in the late in the regular season, but I'm telling you what, Nick Foles is a heck of a lot. Put all that stuff aside. I'm going to tell you exactly what happened. Here is what really went on in Philadelphia last night. We all know that the New England Patriots have made a deal with Satan, right? Somebody tell me I'm wrong. And while, yes, Brady and Belichick and Kraft are going to burn in the lake of fire with the Prince of Darkness for all eternity, make no mistake, they're living it up now. Because do you know what Nick Foles and the Philadelphia Eagles did last night? Here's what they did. They gave everyone one very important thing that we really, really need at this time of year. They gave some people hope. They gave some people hope that maybe Nick Foles could do this in the Super Bowl. What if he played that way against the New England Patriots? What if this Super Bowl was actually good? What if the Philadelphia Eagles could somehow beat the New England Patriots? But remember, this is a dance with the devil himself. You're not really going to fall for that, are you? Hey, coming back, we need to talk about a few of the interesting NBA games that we saw over the weekend. Are they a sign of bigger things to come, or is this just kind of the dog days of January? So we did see a couple of interesting games over the weekend. And of course, with the NFL finishing up, we will start talking more and more NBA. But some of this is just the dog days of January. Some of the games that we're seeing right now, they're just kind of this time of year. Because the stretch run right before the All-Star break, you know, the All-Star break comes in mid-February. And so you have this kind of run after the holidays. And here's the thing. We know the stars know the break is coming. Like, they know the break's coming. Hey, I get to go, get a little time off, then head off to LA for the All-Star festivities. It's fun. It is kind of a break. It's good to be off a little bit and take it easy. And I get to hang out with some friends out there and I get to goof off and get worship at the NBA festivities and do all that stuff. But do you know who these dog days affect even more? All those lesser players that aren't going to do that stuff, because you know what they're doing right now during these dog days of January. They know here in just like a month or so, they're going to get a 6-day vacation. And they don't have to go do that All-Star stuff. They don't have to go to work. They don't still have to punch in and do, yes, it's less, but still do stuff. You know what they get to do? They get to go on vacation. And it's like you at your job right now getting ready to go on vacation. You're in like short-timer mode. Like everything you do is, yeah. You know what? I'll do that stuff when I get back from Hawaii. Like, just wait. I know, I'll get to that. Yes, I'm going to practice hard when I get back from Hawaii. I don't feel like practicing hard right now. Come on, I'm getting ready to go on vacation. What do you want from me? And so they don't go as hard. And so you see some things at this time of year in the NBA where you're just going, I don't know whether to believe that or not. Is that really a team struggling? Is that just kind of this time of year and I'm not quite sure what to believe? It's hard, kind of hard to tell. But a couple things I saw on Saturday. So first off on Saturday, the Cleveland Cavaliers gave up 150 points to the Oklahoma City Thunder. Hey, they got 24 points from Isaiah Thomas. LeBron had 18 and Jay Crowder had 17. And even Jeff Green and Derrick Rose came off the bench and combined for 24 points. Remember, Isaiah was going to help them, right? Once he gets back and he starts playing, this is really all going to change. We're going to see Cleveland just come right back. Well, I mean, he played pretty well. He had 24. The problem is that the Cavs were out-rebounded 64-36, including getting out-rebounded 16-3 on the offensive boards, and they allowed Oklahoma City to shoot 58% from the field. The Thunder shot 47% from three-point range. Russell Westbrook, Carmelo Anthony, and Paul George combined for 88 points. I don't just look at the Cavs' horrible defense from this game. I also look at this. The Oklahoma City Thunder are starting to figure some things out. And here's one thing that we always talked about in the world of coaching. It is at least manageable to deal with a two-headed monster. Don't get me wrong. Dealing with someone like Shaq and Kobe or Jordan and Pippen or whoever it might be, it's always going to be tough. But you can run some junk defense. You can cheat on them. You can help on two stars. When you have three stars, it can really break down your defense. And the Thunder are starting to figure out if they will space the floor and they will move the basketball and they won't just be ball stoppers. Someone on this team is going to get a good look. And you got to give Billy Donovan some credit, because I know there was talk earlier this season, maybe they ought to fire him. Maybe they ought to move on to something else. The Thunder are starting to play much, much better. But then, of course, we do have to look at the Cavs and their dreadful, awful defense. And there's no hiding that fact. After the game, philanthropist LeBron James stated that the way the Cavs are playing right now, they could get knocked out of the playoffs very early. Do we have that clip from LeBron? He was talking about the playoffs. Let's see if we have that. Yeah, play that clip from LeBron James and what he said about the playoffs.
Playoffs? Don't talk about it. Playoffs? You kidding me? Playoffs? I just hope we can win a game.
Now, that's not actually what the philanthropist said, but it is what he should have said. So that probably is the right clip, even though I don't think that was him, but that's exactly what he should have said. Also on Saturday, we saw the Golden State Warriors go to Houston, and the Rockets played really well. They got the win at home. Chris Paul had 33, James Harden had 22. The Rockets also out-rebounded the Warriors 59-42, and they shot 29 free throws, while Golden State just had 15. So again, is this the dog days of January, or is this a dent in the Warriors' armor? It's kind of hard to tell sometimes, isn't it? And again, it's probably a little bit of both. See, the Rockets might be the second best team in the league. No question about that. And also, the Warriors need to get something from their bench. They got 30 points total on Saturday against Houston. And 16 of those points were from Nick Young. I don't know what it is. I don't know why. Sean Livingston doesn't look the same this year. He hasn't looked like the guy that can carry the second team unit when he's in there. And I don't know why. Because he's been so good at that over the last few years. I know JaVale McGee didn't play. David West didn't do much. And Andre Iguodala didn't even dress. And again, maybe that's just a January thing. And in May, it'll sort itself out. Or maybe this Golden State bench is not very good. And they do need to go find just a little bit more help. Or if they don't, losing a game or two in Houston, it could happen in the postseason too. Hey, coming back, we saw the rich get richer in college hoops. And did you watch any of those fights on Showtime on Saturday night? They actually were a little bit better than I thought they'd be. Hey, just a quick reminder that you have to get something for Valentine's Day for that special someone. And you might as well head over to lootcrate.com/dailydose for all of the latest pop culture collectibles that feature your favorite TV shows, movies, and video games. February's Loot Crate is now out. The theme is called Protect, and it features items from Black Panther, Fallout, The Expanse, and Pacific Rim Uprising. The best part about ordering from Loot Crate, when you check out, make sure you enter Daily Dose in the coupon box. You will get 10% off of that Valentine's order. Might want to head over to Loot Crate and check out some of the things they've got over there. Okay, you might have missed this with all that was going on this weekend, but the Duke Blue Devils signed the number 2 high school basketball prospect in the country when they got South Carolina's Zion Williamson. So that means, if you're keeping track of this, Duke has grabbed the number 1 prospect, RJ Barrett from Canada, the number 2 in Williamson, and the number 3 in Pennsylvania's Cameron Reddish, as well as the nation's top point guard in Minnesota's Trey Jones. You know, that tells me 2 things. One, if you're going to beat Duke, you better do it this year, because I don't know if you're going to do it next year either. And 2, Duke has officially passed Kentucky in recruiting in this era of one and done, which really is pretty amazing for an academic institution like Duke. You wouldn't think that that would kind of be their thing, but what Mike Krzyzewski has done there and the way he's recruited, he has embraced the whole one and done thing. There have to be some people out there that kind of look at it as being, what's the word I'm looking for? Hypocritical? I don't know, but they have found a way to do it. Okay, I know on Fridays we do our weekend preview, and we talked a little bit this last Friday about the Showtime fights that were on Saturday night. Not sure if you watched them, but if you did, you saw a decent card. It wasn't great, but it was decent for kind of no names. Pretty decent fight. First, Robert Easter got a split decision against Javier Fortuna. Not a great fight, but it was a close fight. I didn't think it was fought that well, but it was close. I was not that impressed with Easter. You know, his camp was talking about wanting a unification fight. I didn't think he looked deserving of a shot after that. Anyways, then we had a reasonably entertaining fight in the main event of the night as Errol Spence Jr. beat Lamont Peterson in the 7th round and retained his 147-pound title. He was actually pretty impressive. You know, it was his first defense of his title. And Spence was a lot better than I thought he'd be. You know, he doesn't exactly look like a fighter. Like, he's kind of lanky. He's a little bit kind of geeky looking. I don't know how else to say that. But he doesn't look like he'd be a great fighter. But I'll say this about Errol Spence. He is a very hard puncher. And he's a lefty. Throw some things off, but he had a very, very good showing on Saturday. He was first to the punch most of the night, and while, like I said, it wasn't a great fight because Spence just outclassed him, it did have some pretty good action. Spence was tracking Peterson down, landing, knocked him down early, and then in the last few rounds, you could just see Peterson, he looked like he literally would have rather been anywhere else than in that ring. And that's saying something, because he's a tough guy. It's not like he's a garbage or tomato can fighter. He's a pretty decent guy. But they stopped the fight, and now Spence is 23-0. They're saying maybe he gets a shot at Keith Thurman, which could be a decent fight. Like, not a pay-per-view kind of fight, but a decent fight. I'd, like, watch it on Showtime or something. I wouldn't pay for it, but whatever. Thurman hasn't had a whole lot of interest in fighting Spence, but maybe now he will after that showing on Saturday night. Now, here's the thing that got my attention, and here's the reason I wanted to talk about this. Because after the fight, Jim Gray interviewed Errol Spence Jr., and he talked a little to him. Seemed like a decent enough guy. Do we have that clip from Showtime? Here's a clip from Showtime, Errol Spence Jr.
Performance by him, even though you were thoroughly dominant.
Well, first of all, I want to thank Lamont Peterson, man. You know, a lot of guys, they turned down the fight, and he took it like a real warrior, like a real fighter, and I commend him for that.
And I swear I've heard that guy before. Like, where do I know Errol Spence from? I really feel like his voice is familiar. I'm trying to think where I would have heard him talk before, because I'm almost positive I have heard him. I mean, I've seen him fight a few times. I saw him fight Kell Brook, and I saw him fight Chris Algieri, but I don't know. I feel like I know that voice. Can you play that clip again?
You know, a lot of guys, they turned down the fight, and he took it like a real warrior, like a real fighter.
Yeah, I totally know that voice. Where do I know that voice from?
Oh, yeah. It's time for the ladies' man.
Thank you. What's happening, everybody? And welcome to the ladies' man, the love line with all the right responses to your romantic queries. I'm Leon Phelps, and how y'all doing tonight?
That's it. I knew his voice from somewhere. Errol Spence is the ladies' man. The ladies' man is Errol Spence. I knew it. Hey, we have a full week packed with more Daily Dose this week for you. Tomorrow on the Tuesday edition, we will be looking at a few stories coming out. I want to talk a little bit of college hoops tomorrow. And I want to talk about one thing that the NFL needs to be very, very concerned with. Later this week, we'll have our Hump Day Power Rankings. We'll have overreactions of the week. And of course, on Friday, we will have our Daily Dose Top 5. So we've got a ton to get to this week. Have to say thank you so much for listening to the Daily Dose on your Monday. Hopefully we help you get through your Monday a little bit. For all of those that share the show, it is appreciated. Feel free to contact us with what's on your mind. Email us at dailydosesports@gmail.com or go find us on Facebook or Twitter. Have to say thank you to JSP. Could not do any of this without you. I will see you all tomorrow. Have a wonderful Monday.